Hello and welcome to episode 78 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. I am Patrick Macias, the author of the new book, Mondo Tokyo, Dispatches from a Secret Japan.
And I'm Matt Ault, the author of Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. And what is going on in the modern world right now, Patrick? It's Setsubun season in Japan, is it not?
Yeah, it's a very special holiday where people dress up like demons and they disrupt local businesses and they live stream it on the internet for money, right? That's what Setsubun is, correct?
No, Patrick. You big silly. Setsubun is the day before the beginning of spring on an archaic form of calendar in Japan. It's celebrated every year, and it's most famously known for throwing roasted soybeans into every corner of your house while shouting, Fuku wa uchi, oni wa soto, in with the luck, out with the oni, out. I actually like oni. Like, I don't have any problems with them. I'm big into diversity and stuff like that. So, like, I don't really like driving them out of my house. But, you know, traditionally speaking, they are the harbinger, I don't know how you pronounce that, of misfortune. And so you want them out and you want the luck in. And most popularly, parents often, and especially daddies, dress up like the oni. I mean, there's not a cosplay. It's like you wear an oni mask and you let your kids pelt you with hard, hard soybeans while screaming out with the oni.
Which leads to an awesome montage on the news the next day with like lots of crying infant children and like their parents like terrorizing them, like act three of The Shining. Like literally, this is literally what happens on the news the next day or the same day sometimes if you're lucky.
Japan, culturally speaking and broadly speaking, is a huge proponent of scaring the living crap out of kids at an early age. You know, there's all sorts of traditions involving like oni monsters and ogres and stuff. There's like Setsubun where I think most kids are pretty aware that it's their own dad dressed up like the oni, usually wearing just like a paper mask or something. But, you know, out in like the hinterlands, out in the countryside, there's much more elaborate oni traditions where like people dress up in full costume and like come down from the mountains and go door to door, you know, pounding on doors, asking if there are any misbehaving kids inside. That's the Namahage tradition.
If you do that in America and come to my house, you're going to get shot.
Is that what you stand your ground law? I forget what it's called. But did you dress up as an oni this year, Patrick?
I didn't do the oni thing this year. I went to the supermarket today and there were kids all over the place with little paper oni masks. They were giving out, Setsubun stickers. It was a lovely day. I love these ancient pagan traditions that the locals do. They kept chanting the word sacrifice whenever I was around. It was a little weird for me, but.
You know, this year, Setsubun fell on a weekend. Did you and Ghetto Boys go trick or treat in? I have to say this is one of my favorite times of year because those roasted soybeans that you throw, the makimame, as they're known in Japanese, are really, really good. I eat them. I snack on them while I'm watching TV. And they're kind of healthy. They don't have any salt on them because they're not really... you can eat them. People do, but they're not like snacks. It's just the soybean. I actually like totally stock up on them and eat them, you know, for the next couple months because now all of the soybeans, the makimame, are going to go on sale because it's going to be post-Setsubun starting tomorrow.
It's a post-Setsubun civilization now, I guess.
We're all living in the post-Setsubun era tomorrow. But today, it's Setsubun. Also, does your family do any of the other associated rituals? Like there's eating ehomaki, like, or is that what they're called? You eat like the really thick, the futomaki.
There was some sushi making here in the house, yes, in the Macias household. I did not indulge in the eating of raw fish, but some other people here did, and good for them.
But you're supposed to face the most auspicious direction and eat the whole maki sushi in one gulp. So if you don't do that, you're not going to be prosperous this year.
Wait, so the most auspicious direction is that Nakano Broadway?
Is that where you pray to every morning and every night? Yes. That's my auspicious direction. So I guess from you, where would that be?
Where is the Disc Union that has all the post-punk records? Maybe Ochanomizu? I don't even really know anymore.
Well, may your new year, may your archaic ancient new year be untainted by demons parading through your house. Actually, you know what? I'm sorry I even said that. Oni aren't demons. This is a big pet peeve of mine in Hirokos. Oni are oni, just like yokai are yokai. And sushi is sushi.
You know, everyone's talking about this new Gegege no Kitaro anime movie that's in theaters now. People are saying it's great. People are pushing me to go see it.
Is this the one about the new age musician from the 1980s? Kitaro?
The Silk Road, the guy who did the soundtrack to the Queen Millennia movie? Gegege no Kitaro, am I pronouncing that correctly?
So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, mistaken, this movie, which I have not seen yet and opened this year, it's Kitaro Tanjo. It's like the birth of Kitaro.
It's an origin story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like it starts in like 1955. So it's kind of like a sequel to Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah. Are there any white people in it? Or did the director just not feel like dealing with that whole occupation thing because it was too much trouble?
Yeah. The when the yokai occupied the Japanese collective unconscious. I have not seen this. I would like to. Is it in theaters right now?
It's in theaters right now. People are saying it's great. I'm going to be hauled off to the Toei Marunouchi Theater next weekend to go see it.
The important thing is that this guy, the director of this, whose name is Go Koga, not to be confused with other Gos that we might know, also directed Gai King, The Legend of Daikumaru in 2006.
How was that? I didn't see that.
Yeah, me either. There was like a million. In that like aughts, there was a bunch of weird kind of super robot reboots that were going on. He's also directed a bunch of 48 episodes of Pretty Cure, your favorite series. Like, I can't think of anything to qualify you for delving into a J-horror property than having survived 48 episodes of Doki Doki Pretty Cure.
I literally have like non-otaku, just like Japanese people who like good movies saying, seriously, go check this out. If we're lying, we're dying. I think Hayao Miyazaki is telling people not to go see it. So he's trying to like this like reverse campaign against it.
So I believe this is the one where there's like the older Kitaro, like, or is it his son? I haven't seen it, so I don't know how it's going on.
Spoilers.
I know it's in the poster. I definitely want to see this. I definitely want to see this. So for this is a topic for another episode.
I haven't seen an anime movie in the theater since, what was it? Gundam? What was it called? Like Treasure Island? What was it called?
Macross the movie, summer 1984. I saw one last year because I had to see Miyazaki Hayao's epic.
Unforgettable title.
Aino Corrida, right? In the Realm of the Senses? No, different movie. I saw the boy and the Heron. God, I despise that name.
The Boy and the Heroine, yeah.
The Boy and the Heroine, exactly. That's a totally different film. I'd like to actually see that one. So, Oni, let's put the Oni and Yokai aside because that's definitely going to be another whole... We should do a whole Yokai episode. I don't think we've ever done like a full-on, full-bore Yokai episode. We should have Hiroko on as a guest.
We did a full-on Yokai episode, like maybe it was episode 3 or 4 or 5. It was very memorable from what I've been told by Matt.
3 or 4. God, we were in the single digits once. It's hard to believe.
It was before we were in our 70s, and now we start forgetting things with early onset dementia.
I'm
and that
still
kind
in
of
my
thing.
Prime. Yes, but we'll do it again because, you know, just like Steely Dan, it's always good to do it again.
Go back Mighty Jack and do it again.
Speaking of Mighty Jack, do I understand there's a bit of news on this front?
We are a bit backed up on the news department because we spent the last 2 weeks talking to W. David Marks about all kinds of wonderful stuff. If you haven't listened to that interview, like and subscribe now and listen to our previous episodes. But in the meantime, yeah, we do have some news.
So you start. You go first.
Oh, well, you brought this item to my attention that Hideaki Anno, the director of Evangelion and Shin Godzilla, a movie that's now been forgotten in the mists of time and everyone's throwing hosannas at Godzilla Minus One. Yeah, he directed Shin Godzilla, Shin Ultraman, Shin Kamen Rider. He's working on a new photo book of some kind. Was it the candid photography? Is that what they call it in Monty Python?
The book is called in Japanese, we'll just translate in English, Mighty Jack, a collection of photos from 1968. Okay, so this is a pretty pinpoint like endeavor here. Mighty Jack, for those of you who suck, did I just say that or think it? It's a live action TV series that ran for basically a couple months in 1968. That's it. It ran like from like April to June of 1968. There's only 13 episodes. However, Eiji Tsuburaya considered it his masterwork. Eiji Tsuburaya of Ultra Q, Ultra Man, Ultra 7.
And this little known monster film called Godzilla that came out in 1954.
I think I've heard of that. But Tsuburaya thought this was what he was put on the planet to do. Mighty Jack.
Do the Thunderbirds, but without Super Marionation and kind of like a lot of miniatures. But, you know, I've watched the series. I've watched at least half of it or something like that.
Right.
There's no kaiju, man. I kept waiting for the guy in the rubber suit to show up and start smashing the submarines together.
It's more of like a Bondian, James Bondian / Thunderbirds thing. They're a top secret peacekeeping organization who have this awesome flying submarine called the Mighty, right? Isn't that basically what's going on? And they're fighting an evil organization that is called, are you sitting down? Are you waiting for it? Do you remember what it's called?
I'm buckled in. I actually don't remember right now.
It's called Q. So cute. So basically, this show in 1968 predicted everything that was going to happen in in the lead up to the 2016 presidential contest in America. We didn't get the flying submarine, but we did get the terrorist organization Q. No, but it's a cool show. Tomita Isao did the music for it.
I enjoy the show. There's a lot of, you know, underwater submarine effects, if you like that kind of thing. The best thing about it is the music. The theme song is fantastic. I'm going to play a little bit of it right now.
Robo voice of every episode name. They're amazing. They're like, number one, the man who had disappeared in Paris. Number two, recapture K-52. Number four, oh, motherland, be forever. Number five, scalpel and lipstick. This is like a movie title in and of itself. Number six, steamed icebergs.
This is like a King Crimson album or something.
I know,
like
totally. That. Awesome Aurora is episode eight. Episode nine is Guide to Hell. Then the next one is Bombing Orders. And then finally, the last one I love, Operation : Strange Airship. Which I'm pretty sure is our band name, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think obviously a huge influence on Hideaki Anno and probably Nadia, Secret of the Blue Water, which is like a submarine story, not unlike Mighty Jack in some respect. But yeah, he's doing this like photo book. So I guess he's like selecting and editing the photos they're going to put in the book. But I mean, could a Shin Mighty Jack be in the cards, Matt? Is this the first salvo?
Well, and you know, on the one hand, I love it when, you know, somebody gets popular and successful enough that they can just totally, totally pick their own projects and just do whatever the hell they want. And Anno Hideaki is certainly, he's one of Japan's premier directors now, unbelievably so, because he was in the otaku ghetto for so many decades. Even for me, I'm like, wow, this is a deep cut. This is like digging in the crates. Mighty Jack.
Mighty Jack.
There's not even a Chogokin of Mighty Jack, Patrick.
There was very little merchandise. It's true. I don't think this one was a hit with the kids because it didn't have any kaiju, which was a big minus in the middle of the kaiju boom. You might want to have had a couple of monsters in it. Just a giant octopus, like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea style, but it ain't there.
Yeah, it's very stylish. It's very cool, but it's kind of like, you know, it's been ages since I've seen it, but it feels almost like a throwback. There's a lot of those like really amazing kind of oil painted covers of model kits and record albums and things like that. And the Mighty Jack itself is awesome. It's very Yamato-esque. Basically, it's a flying space battleship thing. So, you know, I get it. I wonder if they're going to do some kind of showing of the props or something like that.
You know, every couple of years, these old tokusatsu nuts put out Mighty Jack books. This is not the first one, I gotta say. Like, if you like Mighty Jack, Japan can hook you up and has been hooking you up consecutively with crap from this show for, you know, whatever, 60 years now or something like that. But yeah, put Hideaki Anno's name on it and watch it fly off the shelves.
Well, I mean, this is the kind of thing that would have passed completely unremarked upon if it wasn't Anno doing it. And I like that he's boosting
it. It was news.
It actually showed up, like it was on like my Yahoo news feed. It's like, stop the presses, like elder otaku putting out book of show that's ceased airing 60 years ago. But that's great. Do not misinterpret what I'm saying here as me being against this. The Mighty Go, as it's known, the Mighty, is really truly iconic tokusatsu design. I'm sure we can find it in Haraguchi-san's attic along with all the other props that he has.
I know another place we could find a Mighty Jack model at Studio Kara, Hideaki Anno's animation studio. Matt, I didn't know how to break this news to you, but I've actually been there.
What?
I've been to Hideaki Anno's office. And yeah, I was in a room.
Did you lick the doorknobs?
I did not lick the doorknobs. It was surrounded on all sides, the meeting room, by model kits of of classic science fiction vehicles. There was the Yamato, there were all the Thunderbirds, and glory be, there was a Mighty Jack there. And there was also like a strange kind of disheveled looking man kind of walking around. I thought it was the janitor. I'm like, oh, who is that guy? And he looked up for a second and we made eye contact and it was Hideaki Anno.
Did his eyes widen? He's like, it's you, Patrick.
Yeah, he knew I was there to ask him, what does the ending of Evangelion mean?
What's it all mean? Is it really based on a true story?
I'd like to think so. Yeah, for sure. I think it's a documentary shot in real time, as my understanding of what Evangelion is.
I have to say, we've had this conversation before, but I have to say it again. Like, Evangelion 3:333 was unironically one of my favorite animated films of, when was that, 2 years ago now?
Two or three, yeah. That was pretty good. Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
It's, well, you know, like, I feel like the time between, like, there was the year 2020, and then 2021, 22, and 23 are all like 1 year to me. Like, I was just in my basement drinking heavily that entire time. So now it's like, I feel like we just did a kind of time warp from 2020 to now. So I can't even tell how many years ago that movie came out, but it's awesome. I love it, unironically.
Yeah. It's pretty solid. I think it's one of the best anime movies in the last recent years, for sure.
If you like strings of digits with like colons in between them, it is great. It has a really great title for that. 3:333
There's nothing obscure or hard to understand about it. It all makes perfect sense in the most linear A to B fashion.
Mr. Kubrick, what's it mean when they go through the monolith? What happens on the other side? Why is he all old all of a sudden? I'm sure at some point we are actually going to cross paths with Mr. Anno. And I've been told numerous times, you never ask him about his work.
Yeah, it's like Fight Club. No, literally, someone else I know is like very close friends with him. He says the first rule of Hideaki Anno is don't talk about Hideaki Anno.
Now Mighty Jack's off the table. We can't ask him about this.
We can't talk about what am I going to talk about? Jumbo Jack? Hungry Jack? Jack in the Box?
Setsubun? Oni? Something. Did you dress up as an Oni, Mr. Anno?
I think we have a topic we could definitely ask him about is like, hey, just between you and me, what do you think of Godzilla Minus One? Being nominated for the Academy Award.
He's buddy-buddy. Isn't he buddy-buddy with Yamazaki? I think they were spotted in some kind of PR event or something together.
Oh, really? Hanging out? He's like, oh, actually, Shin Godzilla is considered the more cerebral of the two films.
Yeah, but Godzilla Minus One is liked by normies more. People who don't even like Godzilla movies like my movie.
Yes, but Shin Godzilla is a biting satire of the response to 311 in Japan. I don't know, this goes on endlessly in my mind. This is like literally I wake up in the middle of the night sweating with these two voices in my head making these noises.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening to any of that because I've been just staring and staring at this glorious oil painting of the Mighty Jack ship from an Emei model kit from the 1960s that is just wow.
Red hot. Yeah.
It makes you pray for space war, if you know what I mean.
War is bad, but space battleships are great. Is it a Japanese person? Explain to me, is the actual message of all Japanese animation.
This is
true.
That's
pretty much what it all boils down to in the end.
Speaking of things that are bad, I think we should touch on the next little topic here. Actually, everything is bad coming up. Everything. All three of the next topics are bad. Two are categorized under alcohol, and the other one is categorized under something that when you hear about, you're going to want to drink alcohol. So which
are you talking about Godzilla being nominated for the Academy Award for visual effects?
No, I am not. I am not talking about that. We're not going to talk about that. It can't happen. We can't talk about it until he actually wins it. I'd actually be shocked if he wins it. I love him calling him he, like, you know, he's a person instead of a special effects department.
We haven't even talked about the fact that, yes, Godzilla is nominated for an Oscar, which to me is like, you know, my mind is completely staggered, like does not compute. Like it's like McDonald's getting nominated for like the Great British Bake Off or something. Like you don't think of Godzilla and Oscar like in the same reality tunnel.
It's unless it's Oscar the Grouch, because he's kind of tokusatsu.
He loves trash. Yeah.
He loves trash. So I, you know, you saw the video of them cheering, I'm sure, the entire special effects department of Toho.
They're like in a Caesarea or like a Jonathan's or something like that, like at 5 a.m, like they've been up all night drinking like Nomi Hodai.
I think it's the first time they've been recognized by anybody except us. You know what I mean? It was like, wow, you know, there's other Americans who love us too. Like, you love us. You really, really love us. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. When is the actual Academy Award show?
I believe it's sometime in March.
Okay.
I'm definitely going to pull out the rabbit ears and the tinfoil and like tune in the channel when they give away the award for best visual effects. I can already see Yamazaki going on stage, like holding up a Godzilla X Plus figure, shouting out like free shipping with all orders from Godzilla.com with purchases of $100 or more.
I guess are they must be deep into the sequel filming now, or at least the pre-production of it.
They haven't formally announced anything. I have seen a lot of clickbait articles about this, but I don't think anything has been formally announced.
Well,
I think
it ends on a kind of cliffhanger, so it's obvious that they're going to be, you know, planning to do something.
Matt, they will never make another Friday the 13th movie. The first one tells a complete story unto itself. The same thing as Child's Play and Halloween and all these other Monster of the Week.
It could be like Freddy versus Jason. Maybe we can finally, now that like all the nerds are in charge, maybe we can finally have that Godzilla versus Ultraman movie that we've always desperately wanted.
Oh, you mean Godzilla versus Gamera, right, Matt?
Oh, yes. I mean, God, they should have, you know, they could do like a Destroy All Monsters with everybody in it, including the Mighty Jack guys. Yes. So can we get back to the real world, please?
Oh, okay. Okay. Things that actually matter. Okay. All right. Sorry about that.
Or things that don't matter. I mean, Mighty Jack is really the only thing that matters on this podcast. But okay, I'm going to start. Did you know, Patrick, are you sitting down for this?
Niwa Shiranayo.
That the Japanese government is launching a digital nomad visa that allows people to work remotely for 6 months in Japan. Traditionally, there's a tourist visa that's only 3 months and you're not allowed to work on it. But now they've made this new category of visa. It's called the digital nomad visa, and it's aimed at people who are going to be remote working but living in Japan.
I have heard of this. To qualify, you have to have an annual income of over 10 million yen, or about 68K in US dollars.
I was going to say, is that like $15,000 in US dollars now?
Which means that every YouTuber on the planet
yes.
is going to apply for this thing. But the bad news is you can't really live in Japan for 6 months.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. It's weird for two reasons. Number one is it's an odd length of time. But the bigger one is, are we or are we not experiencing a invasion, a spate of nuisance streamers coming in from abroad and like, you know, causing all sorts of trouble on the streets? Isn't this visa like mainly for them? Are they the kind of people who would make the most use out of this? So aren't they going to be just channeling directly people into the jails?
Maybe it's bait. Maybe it's literally like you apply for the visa, you show up, and they throw you in the slammer.
Like a roach motel.
They throw you in the immigration center in Shinagawa.
You can live from the immigration center. We should do our next podcast from there, from the jail and the immigration center.
We should just show up at the airport and just shout La Migra at everyone who comes off the plane and watch them run, you know?
This just seems like one of those half-baked government initiatives where somebody had the idea of trying to make Japan look like more friendly toward entrepreneurs and, you know, digital natives and whatever than it is, because it's not. And this sort of half measure is what gets passed because it's the only thing that, you know, they could get enough support for or whatever.
It's a non-renewable visa. You don't get any benefits like health insurance. You don't have to pay any taxes, but like you need to either live in like an Airbnb or like a manga cafe or like a luxury hotel or something. I can't imagine. I mean, I'm sure there are people who can't afford it.
Well, did you read the fine print? You have to work in a soap land cleaning up the rooms for at least one day out of the week. For every, you have to swab the poop deck in the love hotel. That is your penance for living as a digital nomad. No, that's not. It should be though. I'm writing my congressperson today.
Yeah, someone on Twitter was mad about it. I know that's hard to believe, but they said like, you know, check out the Taiwan Employment Gold Card, 60K in income, 3 years. Yeah, not 6 months, 3 years.
Yeah.
Health insurance after 6 months and permanent residence after 3 years. Can you imagine? They also hold a parade where they sing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow, like the minute you get the gold employment card.
When you leave, do they play the song that they play when the convenience store shuts down or whatever? What is that song?
I can't remember. Fuck out music at the convenience store.
Yes, the traditional. I don't think it was composed for that. Isn't it a Christmas song? What is it?
Is it a Last Christmas by Wham, or what is the one by Tatsuro Yamashita? Yes.
The English version of the Mazinger Z theme song. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Okay, so now that you've heard that news, you probably want to take a drink, but there's some bad news on that front too. Why don't you let our listeners down easy? Can you tell them? The words get stuck in my throat. I can't even say it. You say
okay,
it.
I hope you're clutching your support animal right now. Strong Chuhai Asahi beer will not be released in the future. Sales are reduced due to health risk concerns.
It was learned that Asahi Breweries plans to no longer release new canned Chuhai products with an alcohol content of 8% or higher. Chuhai with a high alcohol content, known as strong type, is gaining popularity, but sales are being drastically reduced due to concerns about health risks. An Asahi representative said, "As we aim for a healthy and sustainable drinking culture, we have decided to refrain from selling high-alcohol Chuhai."
Okay, first I want to ask you how you feel about this, then I'm going to drop a truth bomb.
I mean, my understanding is that strong zeros make strong heroes, so I don't want to live in a world without heroes, Matt.
From zero to hero? Is that what you're talking about?
Drop the zero and get with the hero, as Vanilla Ice once said.
Okay, so I spoke to several people about this, and actually, if you read the article carefully, you will see that they are only discontinuing one specific brand of strong beverage.
Clear Cooler Strong Lemon and Lime Sour.
It is hugely outsold by other competing ones, and so a lot of people are like, why are they even mentioning that they're discontinuing this? Because it's like, there's a constant churn in the Japanese beverage industry, which is, as anybody who spent, 6 months in Japan on a digital nomad visa has known, or is it three? What was it? Anyway, the beverages turn over really quick, and there's always new ones being introduced, and like old ones dying, and nobody talks about it. But they're talking about this because it seems like they're trying to like do a whammy on their much more successful competitors by saying, look at us, we're healthy. So there's still plenty of strong on the shelves, if it's just not this one brand, this one type. So good news. If you want to destroy your brain cells with like sugar flavored 9% alcohol, you know, cut with, I don't know, synthetic methamphetamine. I don't even know what's in those things. There really are liquid crack.
Adrenochrome, mescaline.
Adrenochrome, yes. You can still get your drink on, people.
It says the Clear Cooler Strong Lemon and Lime Sour is only sold at like 7-Elevens. And like, you can't get a Slurpee in this crazy country, but you can get this shit.
They're letting digital nomads in and you can't get a Slurpee? Another thing to write your congressperson about. I have to say, I know there's a lot of people who are strong stands. Is that the word? Like
strong heroes. I prefer the term strong heroes.
Strong heroes, exactly. Yeah. Hibi Yuza, as the Japanese would say. Have you ever actually had one of those? I haven't.
I might have like 10 or 15 years ago. I think I just got like a headache and I was just like, you know what? On second thought, do I really need to be this strong? What makes a man strong, Matt?
What makes a man? Is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Now you're a man, 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 man. Now you're a man, 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 man. You are now a man. You're a man. Now you're a man.
It will be echoing in your head after you drink just half of one of those cans. It's not really good. They're really designed for people who want to get wasted quick and cheaply.
Do you mean teenage girls? Is that what you're referring to?
This is dangerous stuff. Is it a Mickey Finn? Is it a Spanish fly? I don't know. Anyway, we're not going to be troubled by this one particular brand of it anymore. So
yeah, I'm going to say literally the only people I see drinking that stuff are in fact like elderly senior citizens hanging out in front of the Combini or like in the park nearby, at least in my neighborhood.
You mean three blind, crazy, and crippled senior citizens? To quote some philosophers of the 90s?
And make my ass start giggling, Matt. Yes, three blind, crippled, crazy senior citizens, which is our 90s hip-hop reference for the week, for those of you taking score at home.
Oh, that's actually number two so far this episode. Those are amateur numbers. We got to get those up. So yes, Asahi is drawing a line in the sand, and apparently it is the blood-brain barrier or something like that. No more strong goo will flow into your liver from their coffers or wherever.
No, but you think this, sincerely think this is like a PR kind of whitewash job to make them look like we're doing the right thing. We aim for a healthy and sustainable drinking culture.
Companies quietly discontinue stuff all the time, and there's like tons of new alcoholic beverages coming out all the time. So the fact that they're kind of posturing here is, it makes you wonder, what's the real story? We need to ask Q, that organization that controls the world and Mighty Jack. I think maybe they're behind this, Patrick. Honest to God, though, like all joking aside, like these strong drinks they're kind of a societal problem. Like there's been a lot of talk about how you can, you know, it's definitely the cheapest way to get a huge huge amount of alcohol into your system. And because they're really sweet, like they're very easy to drink. And there's a lot of cases that they've talked about of people who have, you know, kind of addiction problems, addictive personalities, getting hooked on these suckers. And they're on every street corner for like 300-400 yen.
I thought they were supposed to be good for you. It's called strong, you know? I mean, like, it's going to make me ganky, right?
It's not strong, it's strong goo. So you got to think about it this way. It's like strong adjacent, which means it makes you strong for the duration of the high. You know, you can definitely put your fist through like a plate glass window.
But like the cops will like shoot you, like they'll riddle you with bullets and like you won't feel anything. And then like you'll just drop dead, like just snorted a bunch of angel dust. Is it that good?
Well, I think
good?
If you have enough of these strongs, you can actually like flex your body and send the bullets flying back at the cops, like, you know, Terminator 2 style.
You mean Choco Ball Mukai style?
Oh God, please do not. Don't plant these images in my head.
Is this like Candyman if I mention Choco Ball Mukai? Look, everyone listening right now, just Google search Choco Ball Mukai.
Don't risky click. Risky click.
Hot tears of shame.
So on the alcohol tip, there is one more piece of news.
I don't like this one at all.
And this one to me is also a little bit suspect in a weird sort of way. Are you going to tell this one or am I going to tell this one?
I'm doing the Danny DeVito head shake right now, but I'll read the headline anyway. Prices for Hibiki, Yamazaki, and Hakushu whiskeys will more than double in April, Matt. Double trouble.
Suntory Spirits has recently announced that it will be revising the prices of its domestic premium whiskey products, starting with shipments going out on April 1st. Suntory stated that the reason for the price increase is to help improve the product quality and upgrade its production facilities. A total of 117 alcoholic beverages will be affected by this price hike, with some labels going up by more than 2 times their current prices.
Yes. Although I think it's only, if I'm not mistaken, if I can look at this, it's only for like the age statement ones, the really expensive ones, I think. So like they're saying in here, like for instance, the Yamazaki 25, which is an absurdly expensive thing at 160,000 yen, it's like $1,200.
It's going to go from $1,000 to about $3,000.
I'm going
to
say this is my hot take. This is a very, very controversial take. I love Japanese whiskey. I do. I think it's overpriced. I think it is hideously overpriced from a performance standpoint. When you're talking about, is this a thousand dollar bottle of whiskey? Is it even a $200 bottle of whiskey, which is what the non-age statement like Yamazaki and like Taketsuru and like all of these things are going for? I just don't understand. Like there's so many amazing whiskeys out there and scotches that come from places like, I don't know, Scotland that invented the entire style that are way cheaper and really, really good. So I don't understand why Japanese stuff is so expensive. I just don't. I do like it when I get it. Or would you like to retort?
It was not this expensive just like 5 or 6 years ago. Like I used to get non-aged like Japanese whiskeys for like $60 at like duty free at the airport.
Oh, and yeah, man.
It was good. Was there like a scarcity thing or is there like a demand thing? Like I feel like there's something in the supply chain is like really broken and that's caused the prices to skyrocket more than anything.
I first moved here in 2003 and there was no strong goo, Patrick. There wasn't. But you know what there was? Every convenience store had like Yoichi 10 and like Hakushu 10, like 10
age
years
statement?
Old.
They had age statement.
They
Japanese
had age statement
company.
Stuff sold in these like in those like airport like airline sized, a little bit bigger than airline sized bottles. And I was picking those things up all the time. They were like $15-$20. It was crazy. And so like there was this long, dark tea time of the soul from basically the inception of Japanese whiskey up until about 2010, where it couldn't get no respect. Like Japanese whiskey was seen as a kind of a cheap copy of whiskey coming out of like places like Ireland or Scotland or America.
And then one day, one great day, Bill Murray held aloft a glass of Suntory whiskey and said,
"For relaxing times, make it Suntory time."
Did that change everything, Matt? Was that the inflection?
I think
point?
It was part of it. I was definitely part of it. I think, you know, and it's harder to get in the States. So that like scarcity, anything you have to kind of hunt for and like kind of and kind of kill yourself to get, you are going to love when you get it. I mean, that's just kind of human psychology. But the Japanese distilleries were almost literally giving this stuff away for decades and they sold too much of it. And so what's the problem with whiskey, like aged whiskey compared to gin? You have to age it. And like, no matter how much, how rich you are as a company, company. You can't speed up the clock. And so right now, like, I'm sure Suntory and all these companies are aging huge amounts of whiskey so that they can start selling it again at more reasonable prices. Or maybe they're not. Maybe they're just going to keep selling it for 360,000 yen a bottle. I don't know.
All I know is that, like, I see tourists just like attacking the Japanese whiskey section, like wherever it goes on sale, like literally just like 7-Eleven whiskey, Suntory Old, all that stuff. I'm a Johnny Walker, Black Label guy.
Yep.
Got my glass right here. Like, I keep it simple. But yeah, every now and then I'll treat myself to a non-age statement Japanese whiskey, but I don't love it. But it's fun to mix and match sometimes.
I'm just going to say something here. I don't want this to sound nationalistic or anything, but I'm just going to say this. And I hate to torture any whiskey loving listeners we have out here, because what I'm about to say is what the product I'm about to mention is not available in the United States. Wild Turkey. Do you know? They just released, over the last year, a 12-year-old bourbon, a 12-year-old Wild Turkey, 101 proof. Wild Turkey is already like the gold standard for what a American bourbon should be. This is a 12-year barrel-aged, insanely good bourbon, and it cost, are you waiting? 3,600 yen. It's like $30 for like a 12-year-old amazing American bourbon. So I don't mean to be, you know, like USA, but this is an amazing tipple and dram. And I highly recommend it. And it costs about 1/100th of what a 25-year-old Suntory or other aged Japanese whiskey does.
You know, you always want what's on the other side of the fence, what the neighbors have. I mean, you know, like, I don't drink Japanese whiskey here. I have a bottle of Wild Turkey 8 right over here.
I would drink a lot more Japanese whiskey if it were more reasonably priced. But on that note, I have a friend who is in the spirits industry, who's working in the drinks industry, and he was saying to me that there's a huge, I wouldn't say glut, but there's a ton of Japanese gin on the market. And you've probably seen it in the States. You've probably seen it. It's being exported a lot. And gin is a lot easier and cheaper to make than whiskey because you don't have to age it. It's basically just vodka that has been steeped with various botanicals. But every single one of those new craft gin makers is just biding their time aging whiskey. So like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, they can start selling their own aged statement whiskey that is not from one of the major producers. And so there's some talk that the bottom's about to fall out. I'm sure like the like super collectible stuff, people who want to pay $3,000, you know, dollars for a bottle are not going to change. But I think there's going to be a huge influx of non-Suntory, non-Nikka, you know, non-Yoichi. Like, it's going to be a kind of minor makers, so to speak. Craft distillers are going to be kind of hitting it big in the next couple of years. So stay tuned for episode 780, when we're a couple of years from now. Maybe we can talk about
that. Can we
get
one of these gin companies to like do an ad on the show or something like that?
God, I mean, we should. Now that we've been like dissing Japanese whiskey nonstop. Wouldn't they love to advertise on here? Sorry, we actually love you.
Now that lemon and lime sour strong cooler zero or whatever is no longer on the market and can't advertise, I mean, maybe we can get, I don't know, Japanese gin, I don't know what you would call a Japanese gin. Do they have crazy names? Mighty Gin? Is that possible?
My favorite, my actual unironic favorite is Kenobi, which sounds like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Gin is like quite literally the cheapest thing on the planet. Like really, really good mainstream gin, like Gordon's or Beefeater's, is like $15 a bottle here. Anything craft gin Japanese is going to be like 40 or 50, which I'm kind of like have already reluctance to pay because I'm such a cheapskate. Kenobi is good. But there's a lot of other ones. Kozue, there's like a ton. There's a real ton of them coming out and they're good.
Yeah, the minute they put them in cans and like make them available to senior citizens with like bubbly water and sugar, like the better, I think.
Well, actually, Suntory has done that. There's like the Sui is their like, you know, rail well grade gin, and they're already selling not only it at convenience stores, but it in a can with soda water in a kind of Tom Collins-y sort of arrangement or gin and soda arrangement.
Tan in a can, huh? All right.
Sui in a can. Well, I'll drink to that. I guess that's how we end this.
Do we end it with Sammy Davis Jr. singing the Suntory whiskey theme or something like that? We haven't played that in a while.
It's my favorite commercial. Yes. Sammy, take it away.
Suntory.
I love you, babe. Pure Tokyo Scope, babe. You guys are the greatest.
Shaft is the man.
Actually, my theme song, my ringtone, is Sammy Davis's cover of the Chico and the Man theme.
Oh,
I don't know if
God.
You've ever heard it before, but you know, it's Gen Z for some reason doesn't get my references to the Chico and the Man theme, but it's out there.
So are you team Chico or are you team the man?
Team Chico. Team Chico. The man is Jack Albertson. The man is a mean old white dude.
So it's like, it basically is like me? Am I the man? Is that what you're saying? I'm a mean old white dude.
The man, he ain't so hard to understand, Matt.
Well, you know, nobody understands me but my woman. I feel his pain.
Speaking of your favorite shows, we want to thank you so much for making Pure Tokyo Scope your favorite show. So keep listening, keep supporting our show, spread the word, build the congregation, go out and convert your neighbors to the Pure Tokyo Scope death cult.
Evangelize it. Evangelize it. Give them Kool-Aid, but no poison, please. Just regular Kool-Aid and convert
them. Just 8% alcohol and sugar.
That's exactly. Kool-Aid. Strong-goo Kool-Aid. Strong-goo. My favorite kind. Yes. Don't spike the Kool-Aid.
And we'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time. We'll be right back.